This is Rakovic's After Hours.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rack Addicts After Hours. You're listening to episode 25, and we've lost Andy. Oh, no, he's gone for this episode, so it's back to our usual trio of Pete, Telmo, and my name is Ben. A quick call to arms, if you do want to engage with us or leave any feedback for our episodes, the best place to do that is going to be Facebook on the Rack Addicts Facebook page. Just comment on the episode. We'd love to hear from you. We'll start with our usual weekly update. I've actually been on a few walks, and because of the lack of traffic, and I think I went a bit further just yesterday, I did manage to do some field recording and not have the deadly buzz of the A3 in the background for
That's
the first
amazing.
Time. Yeah, it's difficult to escape around here. I had some birds, and it was that was really, really quite satisfying. And actually, if you backtrack some episodes, I think we mentioned this, but Telmo, you and your other half recently got a Vitamix.
Yep.
I was on a walk.
Did you found a Vitamix?
My partner. No, we haven't yet. But we were talking about sort of the investment that a Vitamix is, and comparing it to the investment in an SM7B, the podcast classic. So. There's a lot of cars near where I am, so that's a common complaint. We've got this background noise, so I have no plans at the moment. But potentially, a Vitamix and a 7B, what a combo. Anyway, what have you chaps been doing this week? Telmo, been up to anything fun?
Now, if I was you, I would get both, because...
And then blend the 7B, and then...
Blend.
Yes.
And you're going to get the best tone out of it, believe me. What have I been up to this week? It's been me, myself, and my other half. We've been doing quite a few treks as well, but we've been taking guitar on our backs and recording a few videos for social media.
Oh, yeah, I've
seen
some of those on Instagram.
So that was really cool. Two of the days we mostly spent a day out, played some frisbee, and it was just lovely. It was just lovely to be outside and to be able to do activities that don't involve four walls. And I'm pretty sure that you must appreciate that as well. I've been doing some reading. I've been recently exposed to this book. It's The Jazz Composer by Graham Collier. A very interesting book if you want to understand how improvisation works in a jazz scenario. What is the ultimate goal of a jazz musician, which obviously includes, creating the best you can on the go, which is something very interesting. And it takes you through some of the methods and some of the ways that Duke Ellington used, and how important he was to music in general. Guys like Miles Davis, like Jelly Roll Morton as well. So it's a very interesting book. I'm about halfway now, but it's been keeping me busy as well. I've just been feeding myself with information and going out. How about you, Pete?
Unfortunately, I've managed to do a full Brian May. And for our international listeners who possibly didn't see the news article, which was last week, Brian May managed to damage himself in some way doing vigorous gardening. And seemed to manage to have done the same thing. I was digging a trench for some fencing and managed to injure my back, unfortunately. And the irony of it was that while I was digging, I was thinking to myself, I mustn't do a Brian May. And subsequently did it.
And there it happens.
And there it happens, exactly. So I'm slightly inconvenienced, to say the least. So if there's any sort of squeals of pain, it's me adjusting myself in my
just
chair.
In the background, just hear a little...
Quite incapacitating. But I've experienced this sort of thing before, so I'm hoping that it will pass relatively soon, as I cannot avail myself of the services of a chiropractor or anything else at this time, because obviously... with the social distancing, they're taboo. to say
absolutely.
The least.
We can only hope that this goes away soon so you can feel better.
Yes, thank you.
Right, into our first topic. Looks like we've got that. Is it a new release or just they've made it free now? But Valhalla DSP Supermassive, which I have downloaded because my black market plugin dealer who sends me, he goes, hey Ben, you wanna check this guy out? So I just got it. Haven't used it yet.
Pulls a plugin out of his pocket.
This was announced from what I could see on the news on the Valhalla DSP site. It was announced about 2 weeks ago. So it is very relatively new. I suddenly spotted the Div Kid had done a video about it. So
with quite a good thumbnail, actually.
Yes. And rather than just plow into the video, I thought I've got an account with Valhalla, so I thought I'd just go over there. You don't need an account for this, and it is absolutely 100% free, and I have used it, and it is phenomenal.
Is it really juicy? Oh,
it really is good. What it seems to be primarily designed for, certainly things with very long tails, if not infinite tails. And if only I could get this in modular.
Oh, yeah. Maybe they do a tip-top ZDSB card. That'd be great.
Well, I mean, it'd be worth almost giving a nudge and say, is there any possibility? But it is a phenomenally good tool. It's very simplistic in its layout. There's very few controls, but there are presets. I played around with the controls a bit, but it's when I went through the presets and you really understand what this thing can do.
So how would you say, which sort of set would you use it with? Because it, obviously if it's got long tails, we're expecting some sort of like ambient music, background.
All that sort of stuff. I mean, I was just firing, I was using a soft synth and you could pick virtually any sound, whether it's a sort of very short, sort of fast attack, a short delay sound, or even a long sound. With some of the really, really long reverbs, it was just infinite. And it was almost became another musical instrument. And this sort of atmospheres that you could build with this, it's fantastic. And obviously, within a door, you could have multiple sessions, you know, per track of this particular plugin. And the sort of stuff that you could create is just completely inspirational. I'm blown away with it, especially, and I know I keep reiterating it, because it's 100% free.
I have to say I'm actually quite interested to try it out, not only because of it's got 8 unique kind of modes, but I'm a Sagittarius, so it seems like this week for me it's slow attack, longer decay, and high echo density for Sagittarius, so excited about that.
Yeah, there does seem to be a bit of an astrological kind of hint floating around in some of these preset ones, but these are just the... sort of subset. There's a subset below of actual individual for each of those as well.
So it does look really good.
Yes, it's fantastic.
Now, Subharmonicon really comes alive when you stick it through some effects. So I'll probably give that a go later today.
Oh, yeah, nice.
I can't recommend this enough. I mean, I would pay for this if it wasn't free.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's not the only one, is it? They've got a couple more.
Yes, there's a pitch shifting delay which is free, and then there's another one which is another one that's free, but it's only free if you've already purchased.
Right.
So one of the actual licensed ones, and you're required to log in and fill out a survey or something like that, and then you can receive that one free.
Yeah, one of our friends Sam, who's been on the podcast before, he's always using Valhalla DSP stuff. Is just. I think juicy has always been the word for the reverbs and things.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I don't think character. You can really, really beat them for sort of reverbs and delays, and certainly for plugins. And obviously they, I think it's only the one gentleman, isn't it? And obviously he does a couple of cards for the ZDSP, the tip-top audio, which I have got the, I can't remember.
The silver faceplate one.
Yes, I can't remember which of the Valhallas I've got, though. That's the one I'm trying to think of.
I think the one it comes with is, like, is it Halls of Valhalla, they just call it?
I've just unplugged it now, and it is, as you say, the Halls of Valhalla, but I think they do Shimmer as well.
Yeah.
Which I'm quite interested in getting.
Actually, in terms of Shimmer, there's, I think it's Happy Nerding make a 4HP effects module, stereo effects module called FX Aid, and that has a really nice Shimmer in it. So I'm kind of got my eye on that loosely.
Well, the one that I would point you to, and I haven't got it in front of me open for the Supermassive that we've just been talking about, is the one, and I believe it's called Billions and Billions.
Oh yeah,
and it's a very nice shimmery reverb, but it's infinite. But yeah, so that one I was playing, that was the one I was playing with last night, particularly the one I landed on, as I say, just striking a note, or you could strike a couple of a sequence of three notes and they just float on indefinitely.
Oh, I love that.
And you get all the sort of, if you do them separate, then as each note comes in, you get this sort of all strange harmonics and they sort of mix, and it's just nice, unworldly.
Mm. There's something about this sort of something about reverberation that just brings a completely different mindset to a sound, to a music that just wants to create atmosphere. It's definitely my favorite effect. If we will talk about, you know, modulation or delays, and, you know, of course they all have a different place for different sounds, but I think reverb works well with anything.
Yeah, overall, reverb's always been my favourite as well.
Yeah.
But as I say, there's always a place for that, even when it's subtly placed, if you're doing sort of vocals and you just want to give it a bit more sparkle, or, you know, whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy it when the reverb becomes an instrument in its own right, and it's sort of...
you get those ones that sort of cross the line into almost a pad-type synth-type type vibe as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the similar thing to the sort of mutable instrument cloud sort of situation. Mm. Where it's a thing in its own right.
Absolutely. For me, it comes back to even, you know, in the 80s when Phil Collins decided to use that reverb gate in that snare, that gated reverb in his snare sound that completely changed the way that you could use reverb for drum kits, for example.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of people think it's a bit of a cheesy effect, but I'm a big fan of that whole gated reverb sound as well. Just grown up on too much Phil Collins.
Mm-hmm.
There were people prior to that. I mean, Stuart Copeland from The Police was very renowned for using effects processing on his drums. He would actually use sort of more sort of delays and sort of to sort of enhance the percussive sort of feel of what he was doing. But he certainly had a reputation for that.
Great drummer, and more recently we've got the example of Tame Impala that uses phasing and flanger. Mm. Flanger. I never know how to say it.
It's flanger.
Flanger.
Yeah.
Kevin Parker from Tame Impala, he uses that on drum kits as well to give it that psychedelic sound.
So you know what? I want to start a petition to start calling it flanger.
Flanger.
Put what some flanger across your symbols.
We need to develop a pedal or a module called a flanger.
Just make sure you get a little pronunciation guide with it. Make sure you're calling it a flanger.
Ask our listeners, see if they know how to say it.
Maybe that would be a good name for like the Bufaco crush delay. If you give that some little modulation into the time, obviously it'll give you that lovely pitch warble. Something that's based around that kind of idea. That'd be the flanger.
The flanger.
Nice one. Well, let's jump into our next little section. Just talking about live events industry in general. It's been massively disrupted. And if you know anybody personally who relies on performance for their income, obviously they're going to be struggling quite a bit at the moment. But how we all think it's going to evolve as lots of these people are going to need to find new forms of income. So you've seen lots of people doing little live sets from their home via streaming services. Any other ideas that you might have for how it'll continue?
Yeah, I mean, I was a bit naive. I think a lot of people were naive at the beginning of this pandemic situation, whereby I understood the disruptive nature of it, but I thought it was a much more temporary situation than certainly my perception initially was that it was going to be a temporary thing. So I had a vision of a 6, 8, 10 week kind of lockdown, and then we would emerge into sort of relative normality. And in respect to normality, I mean how things were before. And as all of us have had to acknowledge, not all at the same time, people sort of have come sooner or later to this acceptance that we really are going to emerge out into a world that fundamentally and completely changed in a lot of respects. And it was quite a few, I'm not sure if it was before we actually adopted the remote recording, while we were still actually able to sort of do the podcast in our favourite pub, that we started this conversation, because we were sort of aware that this impending crisis was descending on us.
Brewing, yeah.
But, and we did have discussions on the podcast in respect to, you know, the initial impact and how it was going to affect people. But now the realization is that this is it, foreseeable future. So
do you think this is the last nail in the coffin of just music being independent of the internet?
No, I mean... Humans are very adaptable, and typically the people that are involved in live, a lot of the cases, are relatively young, and the young are more adaptable, let's say, than older generations in some respects. But having said that, you're right that it's going to, or it has accelerated all those sort of the utilization of the internet in some respects. And as I've said many times, we've all got to be really thankful that we actually had the internet so that we could sort of maintain some semblance of communication like we are doing today, doing this remote podcast. But I think people will try and endeavour to go back to various live situations because there's that frisson. I mean, there's something about a live performance, mm-hmm. the immediacy of it, the... you know, the vibe from an audience.
Can't communicate that atmosphere to people watching live in their own homes, really.
Yes, I mean, it's you can still, broadcast a performance of sorts and it can be enjoyed, but it's still not going to have the sort of quality and freshness, as I said earlier, of a live performance. And so that the ways of doing it will have to be found I think people will be very reluctant to... Just dismiss it and say, well, that's all history. We don't do that anymore. I mean, think the scenes of crowded venues and mosh pits and...
they just make you kind of feel a bit ill now, don't they?
Yeah, and people sort of rammed up against the bar trying to get served and all that sort of bustle and chaos. I mean, it seems almost obscene looking back at that now.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think we kind of became like too much civilized not doing that. It feels like, you know, it's...
we'll go back and think, excuse me, sir, you elbowed me in this pit in the middle at the front of this aggressive metal show. Are you quite sure you meant to bash into me like that? No, I didn't really rely on any kind of any income at all from live performance before. I know you have done, not sort of relying on it as your income, but you've definitely... been paid for performances much more than I have, but my main concern is that, I mean, when is the Modular Cafe going to be able to happen in its original form again? So it's not a performance, there are performances there, but it's that community that we've succeeded in continuing online pretty well, but in its original form I really want it to come back, and I just don't know when.
Have you had any tangible discussions with the sort of the main organisers, obviously you being one of them, but with the other people that you collaborate with to sort of organise the modular events and so forth? Or has it not been discussed?
No, I mean, all we've done is we've been doing some live streams. We've had our fortnightly Zoom hangouts, and we've put a post into the community to say, hey, we're doing a Krell off, which I'll talk about later.
What's that?
We'll come to that. Tell me, but yeah, we haven't even discussed just starting again in the original format because we don't see the venue opening just for forever.
Have anyone spoken to the venue? I mean, you've got to assume that they've had discussions within their organisation.
Yeah, of course. I don't think we've approached them. No, we've all been. Sort of one of us, Ian's more closer to the people that run the venue, so he'd be the person to have the finger on the pulse there. But I mean, he's got a business to run, so his concerns are elsewhere.
Yes, no, totally understandable. It's just that we have the imminent. We've already seen some loosening of the lockdown in the UK. I mean, in certain countries ahead of us, and some are behind us on that curve.
I actually think that culture and entertainment in general will be the last to actually go back to normal. If you ask me, the tendency in other countries all over Europe is we're opening now restaurants. That is the next business that will be sorted, and the culture business, the entertainment business, which is the one that's, let's be fair, that's been suffering the most from my point of view, because mostly because all artists, it doesn't matter if you work in theater, if you work in cinema, if you work all over the world, it's very rare to find a country that will give you a contract or a company that will give you a contract for you to provide a culture service. If you're a stage director, if you're a musician, unless you're doing a cruise ship, then maybe you're going to have a contract. But most of us musicians work on just contract-free and you know, just get paid as we go. And that is not only a massive problem if you're trying to put food on the table, but it is also a problem for the industry itself, because I don't think it's valued as much as we think, as just population think in general.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you wouldn't be working on rolling contracts like somebody who is, you know, inverted commas, permanently employed. You'd have your contract, but once that project is finished, that's when you kind of
exactly.
Stuck, I suppose, at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't matter if the show lasts for 3 months, if it's...
It's done.
If it's a tour that you're doing for 2 weeks and you know, and you're under the wing of someone, you know, there should be a contract. Unfortunately, there is no help, governmental help, or not enough help for musicians and artists in general from that point of view. If you ask me, as well, I think, just taking the toll on musicians again, we again need to change the way that we see music, the way that we interact with our fans. What I miss a lot is the interaction, the creative interaction that you guys have been, especially you, Benda, you've been mentioning with your mates at the Modular Cafe, which I do miss. It's what I miss the most, is just hanging out with a band and just playing with a band in a room and just being able to interact with them. But then we also have how do you interact with your fans, with the people that follow you, with the people that go and see you at the gigs, and or just friends. You know, it doesn't matter how big you are. I see a massive change happening over there. I see musicians relying more and more on crowdfunding. Musicians relying more on their connection with their fans to be able to actually make money, and also bigger companies from different, I don't know, imagine like Adidas, you know, that deal that Michael Jordan did in the 90s with Nike, you know, that's going to happen for musicians, because they are a statement for a young, for future generations. And they show a sense of fashion, a sense of culture, and I'm seeing those brands or certain brands taking advantage of that as well. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought, actually.
I think that's fine for an established act who's got quite a good track record already, even if they're quite a fresh or new act. I'm just thinking of all the sort of budding acts that potentially might not be able to achieve the exposure. I mean, in some respects, the internet is the great leveler, but it does help if you've got some sort of gravitas behind you. You've already established. Mm. Other than that, I mean, you can get your stuff out there, but you're just going to be lost in the noise.
Yeah. I think there's a place for everyone out there. I agree, but also mentioning, I've had an email today from a brand, I'm not going to mention which brand, but they wanted to make a collaboration with my band, P-Gypt. They wanted me to show make some publicity, and we would get something in return and that sort of stuff. So I'm talking about P-Gypt, which is a band that, you know, it's local to South London. We've done a few gigs around here, so we're local. We're not established in that sense. We're not even London, so we're not even national. But that's happening to small acts as well. So I see that tendency growing from their point of view.
Yes. I had a conversation with Mark, who's the other half of Rack Addicts in respect to production. And his main income stream was, he's a professional producer DJ, and his main income stream was playing out. And obviously that's been completely eradicated, and he doesn't actually see when that particular form of revenue generation is going to return. I mean, this is very hard to predict. And he's been focusing on the track release side of things. And he tells me that the feedback he's getting from his publishing company is that, as with a lot of other things, in fact, what we saw with the particular retailer that we work for in respect to online orders going up dramatically. I think we've seen a 40% increase on online orders in that respect. The same has happened with the online and streaming services. So a very similar thing has happened with Beatport, and I would imagine iTunes and other purveyors of downloadable content have actually seen a massive rise in demand. So it's not going to fulfill the ability to generate, certainly for that type of thing, for the producer DJ, the ability to generate revenue is much greater generally through performing live than it is from releasing tracks. And it's considered that anything that you release is more of a business card rather than a sort of real money spinner. And it's not until you get to the lofty heights of the real superstar DJs that they can really make a lot of money from their music. But he did say there is a certain amount of optimism there, and that's where he's putting all his focus. Not that he didn't make a lot of effort in the past, but he's really driving hard into that, because what else can he do?
I suppose that increased interest in and use of streaming services could be good news for what you were hoping for, Telmo, which is people, you know, beginning to value music more. I mean, I don't know where I read it, but somebody on the social media somewhere, that's the vaguest location in the world, posted something along the lines of that they hope in, I guess you'd call it a tragedy, sort of this kind of situation, the pandemic type thing, where when you're stuck at home, when you're feeling really down, when you've got nothing to do, you seek the help of artists, people making films, people making music, even to a certain extent of the word artist, the people on YouTube creating content for others to enjoy. That when you're in a rubbish place, you're going to be looking for artists to support you and cheer you up. If there's a more focus on that kind of mentality, then you could definitely see the value of music going up to a certain degree.
Absolutely. I wouldn't say it better. I think that there's loads of entertainment, of course. I'm not saying, you know, guys, all we do is just consume. No, but I'm saying there's a place for everyone out there, and I hear on the radio I'm watching the TV, people talking about certain businesses and how they're being affected, like restaurants or bars. But I never see anyone talking about the music business or the theater business or the cinema, because they all think this is just a world apart, and people are just making loads of money, and they'll be all right, you know.
Yeah, it's that valuing, placing more value on the people that actually make the content in the entertainment industry, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Now, if it's entertainment you're after, you're probably not going to be looking for it in the experimental music world. But the Modular Cafe is doing a Krell off. Now, I can't remember whose idea this was, so if you're listening, I'm sorry that I can't credit you. But in one of our little fortnightly hangouts with the Modular Cafe crew, somebody suggested that we have a battle of experimental music proportions with synthesizers, and we ended up calling it the Krell Off. So a Krell patch in the modular synthesizer world. This was inspired by the Forbidden Planet soundtrack, one of the first ever, if not the first, completely electronic film score. But the way it was created involved a certain amount of random generation and self-playing. In fact, I think it centers around sort of a voltage that, as it increases, it will increase the tempo, decrease the length of notes, and increase the pitch of notes. And it kind of makes this interesting, cascading, completely randomly generated melodic thing. You can leave it completely unquantized, so it's more bleepy bloops, or if you put a quantizer in there and make some chords, it can be really nice ambient arpeggiated type stuff. So we put some guidelines in for make an evolving self-playing patch that you touch once at the start and it will go off and do its thing, make a video, record it, and we'll all chat about it. Actually, it'll be probably the day that this is published, most likely. The video should be available on the Modular Cafe Aldershot YouTube channel for you to see what our contributors have come up with. Lots of strange ambient stuff. I myself did something with the Subharmonicon, the Chase Bliss Mood, the Instro CSL. It had a certain breathing organ-like kind of quality to it. So maybe you can catch that. But it should be a bit of fun. It might increase your interest in the experimental music world anyway.
Ooh.
It should be a bit of fun. I think that's about the end of our prepared topics for today anyway. So it's going to be our usual YouTube suggestion. What have you guys got? Because I totally forgot to prepare one this week. Let me go and hunt through, see if I've got anything intriguing.
Yeah. I'll do the same. Pete, do you want to give us a head start?
Okay, no problem. And this week, as usual, it's nothing to do with music whatsoever. In fact, I don't think I've really got a lot of musical items in my subscription. Maybe Sonic State is there. There are a few that pop up, but I don't think I actually subscribe to them. So this is one that some of our American listeners may be familiar with, and the gentleman is American and resides in the USA. And it is, he has two channels, but the one he predominantly posts videos to on a regular basis, if not a daily basis, and it's called The Daily Woo.
Oh, yeah, you told me about this guy.
He is one of those, and there are many of these type of video bloggers, and he's one of the ones that likes to go to all the theme parks regularly, and he'll regularly do the theme parks, and he'll meet up with other vloggers when he's there. Or sometimes he does cross-country sort of treks. His current location of his parents are in Florida, and he lives in California. And he quite often will make the trek by some motorized vehicle across the states. Or at one stage, a few years back, he actually had a sort of Winnebago type, well, it wasn't a Winnebago, but it was a sort of camper wagon type of vehicle, and he tends to go to the really sort of the back of beyond type of places that off the beaten trail that tourists wouldn't necessarily go to, and he's quite into the sort of old decaying Americana and that type of thing. It's all cool. Very low key. He's been doing this for, I would like to say, about 10 years now, solidly.
And, wow, it's been around basically as long as YouTube has then.
Yes, so the early ones were quite primitive, but he's maintained the style and he's good at orating. To my ears, he's got a voice like a Hanna-Barbera villain. That might be doing him a bit of disservice. I'm not that au fait. I can kind of distinctly, you can kind of hear a California accent and you can hear East Coast accents. My ears aren't as attuned to it as maybe people who live in America and have a better understanding of regionality over there. There's just something about his sort of demeanor. It's one of those that you don't have to. You can either sort of intently watch, or you can just have it sort of running in the background. And I think with a lot of these things, again, it's the regularity. There's something to be said for regularity, because you know that there's going to be, if all fails, such and such a person will have posted a video that you can sort of lose yourself.
You can always go back and relax with one of their videos.
So currently he's obviously experiencing the lockdown as it stands in California at the moment. And because they're starting to open up a bit over there, he's been visiting various eateries, some of which I'm familiar with because we have the same brands in the UK, but some are very particular to California, or certainly very particular to the USA.
Has he been to a Rubio's?
I'm not sure at the moment.
Southern California thing.
There's a Ruby's Diner.
Ah, no, it's Rubio's. They do fish tacos. That's one of my favourite places.
Okay,
from,
he went to
La Jolla area.
Days, like yesterday, he went to El Taco of Orange.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe there's a connection in some respects to Taco Bell, but it's something historical there. And, so it would be the general sort of burger joints, hot dog joints, Mexican, so forth, all sorts of stuff. I wouldn't want to have a diet based on that type of stuff. That regularity, it'd destroy me. But he seems to enjoy it. He likes his food in that respect. So it's
he's a happy man.
Yeah, he does seem to be. He seems to be able to manage it quite well. There was a period a few weeks ago where he actually spent 2 weeks inside his apartment solidly. So he was sort of just doing tours of his apartment.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of commentary. Brilliant. And he's got a few catchphrases and things he's repeated over the years. And as I say, a lot of it is just general familiarity and that sort of continuous posting. The other ones he does is sort of goes to the movie locations. I mean, I know a lot of people do the same type of videos, you know. So, you know, go to the locations of Back to the Future or locations of Ghostbusters or something like that. So he's done that sort of thing. I've always wondered, he's never come out of the, as far as I can tell, he's never ventured outside the sort of North America or even gone into Canada. So he tends to stick to the States. I think he'd be quite an interesting person if he was picked up by, you know, what sort of one of these UK sort of general interest programs where you'd have him feature a sort of perspective from America, or have him come over to the Europe to experience, you know, that'd be quite interesting from his perspective.
Yeah.
But yes, he's out there. So again, it's the particular one we post regularly is just The Daily Woo, all one word.
Nice one, Telmo.
Well, crossing the Pacific to New Zealand, there's a channel that I've been following. It's been quite a few years, and it's not music related. It's called Living Big in a Tiny House.
I love that channel.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Excellent.
It's a great channel. It's about a dude called Bryce. He's super passionate about small spaces and design of small spaces. So basically, he travels all over English-speaking countries. I think he started in New Zealand, went to Australia. There's quite a few ones in America. There's a few in the UK as well, as this is the tiny house nation, per se. It's becoming... you know, it's taking over the world, especially with people of a younger generation not wanting to rely on mortgages and ruining their whole life because of, obviously, you know, it's just it's the fact of the freedom of having a tiny house. There's something liberating. There's something liberace about it. It's a very interesting channel. Loads of really cool stuff to watch. There's off the grid forest gardens with houses in it. There's like 17-year-olds in the UK that build his own tiny house for $6,000. There's ultra modern ones. There's yurts. There's vans. There's tree houses, cob houses, anything, you know. All you have to do is just sit down and relax. And
it's very relaxed. I don't know why it's so relaxing, but it really is. Do you know
the
channel?
New Zealand accent, maybe.
Maybe. Do you know Never Too Small?
No, I don't know that one.
You'll love that channel as well. That's from Australia, but it's basically the same thing, but with a slightly more architectural flavour. So an architect has done a conversion of like an old apartment into something really minimalist, modern, small, whatever, they talk through that, and it has that same relaxing vibe. It doesn't have as characterful a presenter, and it's not so much interviewee. It's more just they're shorter, so sort of up to 5 minute things just about the space, but that's really good as well.
Yeah, I do love, because I'm a big fan of this Japanese movement of you know, less is more. I don't remember exactly what's the name of it.
I've got a book to lend you. I'll tell you about it later.
We're going to have to sort that out. But yeah, I mean, it all started with Feng Shui a few years ago. Feng Shui. I've always been a fan of that as well. But yeah, I'm digressing now. But yeah, check it out, Ben.
Living Big in a Tiny House and Never That's Too Small. Really good channels. So one of my hobbies, apart from the music hardware, what else do I do? Anyway, one of my other hobbies is coffee. So a lot of the time, if you get a bit too nerdy about coffee and you start using scales, a really fancy grinder, and it takes you ages to make coffee, people go, oh, why bother? Just who cares? But why would you drink coffee when you can make it better? Why would you drink bad coffee when it's very simple to make something really, really nice. So what I'd recommend is checking out James Hoffman's channel. Okay. He runs Square Mile, which is quite a famous roastery in London. They make really great coffee and have incredibly strict requirements for the kind of cafes that can use their coffee. But he's got a video called The Ultimate V60 Technique. So a V60 is a brewer from a Japanese brand called Hario. Just a little the sort of original little plastic cone, filter papers, coffee in, water in the top. Bob's your uncle, but he goes really in depth about grind size, bloom times, ratios of how much coffee to water, yeah, and all this kind of thing. And it really helped me kind of nail down a repeatable recipe, so you can really get to know the differences between the coffees you're buying. But that's,
I think I've seen his Wakako Nano Express product review.
Yeah, he's got a few good series, so he'll review strange brewers and also clear coffees and weird coffee drinks, which he almost never likes, but it's very entertaining watching him drink something disgusting like a clear coffee. Well, I think there was one which is like a grapefruit juice with coffee. It was gross. Anyway, watch his video if you want to learn how to make better coffee, but his channel's very entertaining anyway.
Can I ask you, how do you have your coffee, Ben?
I use a Chemex, which is a really nice blown glass brewer with this wooden collar. It's a bit of an icon. You probably will have seen it in various, like Friends. It's in episodes of Friends and it's in Interstellar. But it's the same kind of deal. Filter paper in the top, coffee in it, water, and off you go. Most of the time, it's just black filter coffee, which is what I go for. I did inherit an espresso machine from one of our colleagues at work, Ruri. But actually, my other half's a lot better at using that than I am. So I've yet to crack the espresso world. But one day, just filter coffee, though.
I grew up on the espresso world, I got to tell you. Mm. Being Portuguese and just waking up in the morning and just having almost one in the morning, early morning, and then one in the late morning, and then one after lunch, and then one in mid-afternoon, then like two in the evening. It's absolutely insane.
Sounds like a bit of a habit.
but you get used to it, and it becomes a social event. Oh, let's just go and grab an espresso.
I know a lot of different countries will have their own most popular or traditional coffee preparation. Is there a traditional method in Portugal, or is it more just, you know, espresso machine, just make an espresso?
The machines have to be high end, of course, but I think it's more about the type of coffee that we use and how we make them. So it's normally either Brazilian or West African coffee from like places like Angola or Senegal, and you know, you can get really good stuff from there. Normally what people do is if you're having an espresso, you only put one shot because, you know, it's going to be just a one shot. But we put three times as much coffee in that shot. So it's really, if you go to Portugal, it's going to be thick, creamy, and very kind of like,
is it strong. Really punchy?
It's really punchy, yeah. And you almost have it as in one go. Probably take about two sips and that's it. But it's really creamy and thick. And then you would have it with a glass of water and with lemon as well, just to help it wash it down.
Actually, one of our local coffee shops who I worked for one shift before lockdown, it's a Swedish couple, and they introduced me to having an iced espresso with a wedge of lime in it. That's actually amazing. So if you ever get a chance, give that a go. Or if you're just at
a
cafe, you say, do you have any lime wedges? And just get them to do it for you. It's really nice.
I'm going to try that out, man.
Yeah, and all our listeners, I hope if you're into coffee, you do see the appeal of experimenting with it anyway. But thank you very much for listening. That's all from Pete, Telmo and I. Hopefully we'll see you in the next episode, 26. So just a reminder, if you go on to Facebook, the Rack Addicts Facebook page, you can interact with us there. We hope to see you soon. Cheers.